Can start the recording. Okay, thank you. Good morning, everyone. It is 11:04 a.m. on Tuesday, November 17th, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Randy Christman. We are awaiting the arrival of Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk, unless she is dialed in, which I don't believe she is. I think she's going to be here in person. This is a work session on Senex Pipeline / Endeavor Field Services, case numbers PU-17-97 and PU-18-72. I don't have any opening comments, Commissioner Christman.
I also do not have any opening comments. I think the two cases are primarily cited because they're examples, but it's been my understanding that for the point of this work session, we're trying to figure out overall kind of a strategy for how to handle these types of cases going forward. And so I think that is really the emphasis. I'm kind of buying a little time here.
Yeah. No, I think that is a excellent point, a good way to frame this up. And we also have from staff Mr. Brian Johnson and, of course, Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk, our wounded warrior. So I don't know.
I ran out of things to say about the case. I was trying.
Right. And the long-term forecast is mostly sunny with temps in the 40s.
And I believe we also have our director of public utilities.
Yes, Mr. Pat Fahn is on the line.
That is remotely.
That is correct. He is remote as well. And I don't know if we have any other staff members, but I don't know. I'm just going to turn it over to either Brian or Julie.
I'll just make a couple comments, too, and then we can hear from staff.
Okay.
So I haven't talked to Pat about this particular issue right now, but I believe it relates to something that we talked about quite a while ago and actually had a work session on scheduled that got canceled and never rescheduled. And that is, I hope, that we're talking about some of the reroutes and our process for how to process those reroute changes. There's been a lot of them in the Senex Pipeline case. And from my perspective, I feel like we've created too many hoops for the company to jump through to get to make those changes. And I think we should talk about streamlining that process. So I'm glad that Pat brought this up and is bringing this to our attention. And I'm assuming has some ideas. You guys have some ideas for how to fix it. So I'm going to turn over to staff, first of all, to kind of bring us up to speed on where we're at, like kind of summarize things, and then talk about whatever proposed solutions you guys might have.
And does everyone have the email that Pat sent out that really frames this up?
I don't have it in front of me. I can pull it up.
Yeah, it was sent yesterday. And Brian, are you going to be referring to that as well? Or Pat? I don't know.
Maybe Pat can just start and go through that.
Okay. All right, Pat, sure. can you hear us okay?
Okay, good.
I can hear you okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfect. Okay, take it away.
All right. I have to do a little bit of moving around here to get to the email that I sent. But I'm there now. And I guess my purpose in asking for a work session was more about, you know, how do we handle situations where we find that there are route changes that we hadn't heard about or the company hadn't filed any paperwork for under the reprint law. Of course, the reprint law that I'm referring to is, as quoted in my email, it's North Dakota Century Code Section 49-22.1-15. And it says before or during construction, the utility, without any action by the commission, may adjust the route of a pipeline within a designated corridor if, before conducting the construction activities associated with the adjustment, the utility files with the commission a certification and supporting documentation that the construction activities will be within the designated corridor, and two, that the construction activities will not affect any known exclusion or avoidance areas within the designated corridor, and three, that the utility will comply with the commission's order, laws, and rules designating the corridor and designating the route. The activity that caused this to come up was that in one of our cases, a third-party inspector reported a situation where the pipeline construction had deviated from the designated route, but they weren't aware of any paperwork or certification that had been filed with the commission prior to construction of that route adjustment. And staff checked on that, and it was true that if there was a route change, the company had not filed any paperwork. And so the commission staff asked for as-built GIS maps of the route and compared those as-built GIS maps to the GIS map that was filed with the application. And actually, this in both of the cases that we cited for this work session as examples, that was the situation. Staff was comparing as-built maps of the route to the route that was filed with the application, and it found deviations that hadn't that the commission hadn't received paperwork for, the certifications that are required under 4922.1-15. And so my question here is, how should we proceed when the staff discovers the situation? And I provided, I guess, a proposal, or in my mind, what I would think would work for a process, and that would be whenever staff compares the as-built maps to the GIS maps and finds that there are deviations between the two, or whenever the commission's third-party inspector reports any deviations and we confirm it, then we would list, if those deviations were some distance, and I just used the 20 feet in my example, if they were to exceed or were under 20 feet deviation, then the commission staff would write a warning letter to the company. But if they were over 20 feet, then we would prepare a notice of noncompliance and issue that to the company. And then if in the future after that, if the company that received a warning letter subsequently constructs a route change without filing certification with the commission, we would issue a notice of noncompliance for that. And of course, in any situation where there's a notice of noncompliance, staff works with the company. The company has an opportunity to respond to that. And in the end, it's the commission, you know, staff determines whether they're going to file a formal complaint or whether they're going to work on a consent agreement. But in the end, the commission makes a final decision on the resolution of the issue. So I guess the question is, does that seem like a reasonable process for staff to use in the future?
Can I ask a question, Pat? Just you said deviations of as little as 3 feet in the past, and I think what you're looking at going forward is 20 feet. But 3 feet, 36 inches, what, when is it considered a deviation? When it moves an inch?
Well,
because I mean, you're talking about, I think generally speaking, it's pretty exacting science, but good grief, there's no way that pipe's not going to move around a few feet in the trench, or when they're boring, it just doesn't seem possible to me. So does the law state what a deviation is? We're just saying?
To my knowledge, it does not state what a deviation is.
So we're just saying it's a deviation because it's not within an inch or exactly on the line?
Well, within an inch, I won't be able to tell even in the GIS.
Right. I'm just trying to get a handle of, okay, at this point, it's deviated. When do you say it's deviated? When it's off by a foot, or?
I think
if I could see a deviation, a difference in the GIS between the designated route and the GIS as built route, then I would note that in either the warning letter or the notice of noncompliance.
Brian, are we?
There is no definition of what a deviation is. And I guess, I don't know, maybe Pat can clarify this for me. Are we comparing a GIS pre-map of the line to the GIS end map of the line? I want to make sure that we're not, you know, putting an apple over an orange and saying, well, it's different. So that, I guess that's one question that I still have are they laying out a GIS route and then we're using the as-built GIS to compare it? Is that correct, Pat?
Well, when the company makes an application with the commission, they file GIS of the proposed route.
Okay.
And when the commission issues an order, the commission adopts either the route that was proposed in the application, or sometimes there are amendments along the way. But what we want to compare is the as-built GIS to the designated route.
Okay, so I have some thoughts on this. I appreciate your trying to stick with the letter of the law, but I think that we have to be realistic about the resources we have and what some of, and using those to get the most bang for our buck. This, if a company is making a deviation on a route that is slight and doesn't, and they have already reviewed, doesn't affect any avoidance or exclusion areas, then the legislature has laid out this process where they don't need approval from us. Now, it does say that they need to notify us. I would like to move in the direction of notifying us, like, because the whole point of this was to make it easier for construction and to not slow things down, because our construction season is short. So, I mean, to me, especially on a long line with it like this, if they notify us, like, I'd like to go totally opposite of where Pat's going, quite honestly. I'd like to go that they notify it for these kind of deviations that are within the designated corridor and don't affect any exclusion and avoidance areas, then I would like them to do that once. Here's where we deviated on and doesn't, and show it and provide all the paperwork. And because, I mean, they have, I don't know how many filings they've made on this route, and we've done notice of opportunity for hearings, or we've had just, well, I guess we haven't done that, but it's just been paperwork churning, saying, hey, we've moved this. Okay, now we've moved this. And it's just, what does that do? Like, what does that accomplish for anybody? And do we have staff time to spend evaluating every single one of those and confirming that an exclusion or avoidance area wasn't hit? Now, if they hit an exclusion or avoidance area, which we'd be able to see in a as-built because they're all identified on maps already, then they're in big trouble. So the burden is on them to have, then they're being threatened with a violation of the permit and some potentially serious fines. But if they're not, and they know that, and they're just filing, you know, going through the order of business to let us know that they've moved the route, I'm open to a much more streamlined process. And if you guys have a different proposal, I'm open to that too.
There's one area where I feel like different things are being said and going from memory. I'm getting mixed up. You just talked about all the filings they've made about the route changes. This email, using these two particular cases as an example, in both cases says for which there's no certification on record.
They kind of
changed.
Which
is it? Did they certify these changes or didn't they certify the changes?
I'd say it was both. They went through a process of certifying a bunch, and then apparently they haven't been lately.
I think the way to clarify that is in the one case, they came to us with some changes that they discovered and were certifying them to us. I think at that point, Pat then took and put the GIS as-built map over whatever he's comparing it to and found some additional ones. And it's all those additional ones that were found afterwards that we're having more of an issue with. So it's a bit of both, I think, kind of. They came to us with a bunch of very legitimate and again, they're the ones that came to us with them, like, we missed this. This was a change. Wasn't supposed to happen. It did. We're certifying it now. And then we've discovered additional ones.
And is that how it happened in both of these cases? Or in the other case, did they not certify anything?
The other case, that one's a little bit, I'm not as, Pat might be able to help us on that one. But I don't think they came to us with any route changes. I think that was one where we found it. And they're not apples to apples cases either. One has got many minor changes, deviations due to things of an existing pipeline, things like that. The other one, there's some that are, I mean, they didn't even come close. So you're playing pin the tail on the donkey and they put it on a map in the other room. I mean, there's some pretty big ones in that one. So,
and those were not certified ahead of time?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
So this has been an ongoing issue for, I'm guessing, it's been a problem or an issue, I call it an issue instead, for a long time.
It's probably as long as we've been putting pipeline in the ground in North Dakota.
So, and no one at any point in time, I mean, are we approaching this correctly or would it, or is this, what if the law stated that no unreasonable or reasonable deviations within the route corridor are perfectly fine due to, you know, maybe it's really rocky ground and you've got to try and shift over and they're within the construction corridor anyway, which means that soil is going to be disturbed.
Correct.
Regardless.
Yeah, and so it's been cleared for construction.
Well, so, you know, excluding, of course, if there is an unexpected find that would be of historic significance, et cetera. Well, even then, it's, you know, you look at DAPL. You have a company that did exactly what they should have done with one missing just one step at the end.
Right.
But, you know, we don't want to incentivize companies either just to say, you know what, it's easier to run that, keep that dozer going or whatever and just clear the ground.
Yeah, you know, I think it's best to not, I don't know, I've always looked at cases and things, whether it's been here or in my past jobs as a prosecutor, just to not draw real bright lines if you don't have to. I think as these things come in, we can look at them if it is a violation, and a major one, that where it was one of those, we're going to just do it and ask for forgiveness later and not permission now. That's one case. And then you have other ones where these are some minor ones that, you know, I don't know, you know, that we're not going to discover until it's all the way done and built and we look at it. So I think there's a difference there. And I think that as staff, we can look at them on a case-by-case basis and determine what is appropriate, what wasn't, get certifications when we need to. I guess I would liken it to this. You know, we're looking at a number of what might be acceptable or not acceptable. And to me, it was like when I was a police officer, it was a speed limit. And generally, I didn't pull people over until they were going 10 miles an hour over. Doesn't mean I couldn't. Doesn't mean they weren't speeding. It doesn't mean anything other than that's just kind of where I started looking at things and went from there. And I think we can do that with cases like this, too, and really parse out, you know, it's like, okay, it's moved 3 feet here because there's an existing pipeline that they had to move. And obviously, what else are we going to do? Are we going to stop for a month to certify a change for that? I don't know. But I think there's a way that we can, and I'm not saying we ignore violations or that we're not enforcing violations. It's just we kind of use some common sense and pick and choose our battles and look at things from, and it's always going to be in hindsight because it's already in the ground, but look at them and then make a determination from there.
I agree, Brian. I think for this case, we should get a summary of what's happened so we can look at, since there seems to be a variety. And so I think there's really two issues here. Like, one, how do we want to interpret this law and apply it? And then two, what has happened with the Senex pipeline and, you know, what are the deviations and the circumstances in which we were notified or not notified and what triggered the deviations, et cetera. And just kind of like I'd like a summary of those. And then we can better assess, you know, what if anything needs to be done on any of those.
Sure.
I don't recall that they haven't gone outside of the corridor without getting a permission ahead of time.
Was there one? Okay.
That was discovered after the fact?
I think those are the ones that the company actually brought to us.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right.
And again, it's appreciative when...
Was one of those a boring? I think, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep, and the boring was outside, yeah.
And the other one...
Actually, we talked about those in the commission meeting.
I think so. Yeah. And I think the other one was due to a landowner and railroad crossing reroute that happened on the fly and just... got overlooked.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's where I'm at.
And depending on where staff decides to go with that, with each of those cases, if there's my understanding is there's already a notice of noncompliance in one case and they're going to add to or amend the other one. So if there's a penalty proposed or something, we'll be getting all that information in a case.
Correct.
But I just want to throw some thoughts out because I think I'm on the same page as you, Commissioner Pryor, and certainly what Brian was just saying. I am reluctant to draw a real specific line. First of all, you know, if we draw a line as was the example proposal in the email of 20 feet, well, it's almost just as precise because then that tells someone that 20 feet is okay, but 20 and a half feet, now there's a problem. And then it's the same thing. Now we're arguing over a foot or a couple feet or 6 inches. Here's my points on this, that how I view this and how I hope staff will view it. The number of deviations is just going to be different. If it's a 200-mile pipeline, I would expect more deviations than a 5-mile pipeline. You know, and so I don't know that the number of deviations someone has is such a big part of the story. You know, it can be excessive in a range.
And they can be good, too. I mean, deviations
can be good.
Can be, but like most of the time, I'd say that they're from a landowner or some environmental issue that makes the pipeline better or safer.
But they should be filing the certification with us. And to the extent somebody isn't, that's really disappointing. Because basically the pipeline companies created this reprint law through an amendment late in a session to a bill and got what they wanted and now should be following it, really.
Right.
And so that's disappointing, and I hope that they'll do better. But I think we also need to recognize when they come in or when we catch one that they failed to do, because we're humans. Sometimes people miss something and fail. I think there's a big difference in whether the deviation was in an open trench as opposed to HDD, because my understanding is sometimes those HDDs can vary and they might not even know that they deviated significantly. I don't want us to be messing around with 2 or 3 feet or something like that. I think that, while technically we could, I suppose, I think we just staff needs to use logic in bringing these things. But on the other hand, where that line is, I don't know whether it's 2 or 3 or 10 or 20 or just somewhere in the corridor. One big difference to me is, are there exclusion or avoidance areas in the area? And I'm going to cite an example just to try and clarify how I view these things. I'm going to actually mix two different cases together. We had a pipeline case, as I recall, where the landowner wanted the pipeline as close to the section line as possible. But right across the section line, someone else lived, and they didn't want this pipeline, so it was going to have to be 500 feet away, which meant getting out in that field. And I don't remember how it eventually got settled, but I'm just going to assume, for making a point here, that they had to deviate a little further out into that field to stay 500 feet away. Well, if the pipeline company chose to go 550 feet away and go further out in the field yet to leave themselves some flexibility, then deviating a few feet wouldn't matter much to me. But if they chose to thread that needle and go exactly 500 feet from that residence, and now this is where I want to mix another case that was actually a wind farm case, was staying whatever that distance, depending on their turbine height, needed to be from a residence. And as I recall, then it got into whether that distance was from the center of their house or the exterior wall, and whether the garage counted. Well, if a developer chooses to thread a needle like that, then a deviation of a few feet might be important. If they leave themselves a little flexibility, the same deviation might not be very important. And so I just think our staff needs to look at these things on a case-by-case basis and deem whether there is really importance to it and take into consideration the value of staff time and such to whether these things are worth pursuing.
Brian, are you? Okay, sorry, I didn't want to jump in ahead. When I read Century Code Section 49.22.1-315, the first point might be, I think the staff has just been doing their job according to Century Code, which says the company can adjust the route, et cetera, within the designated corridor if, before conducting any construction activities associated with the adjustment, the utility files with the commission certification and supporting documentation, that and then A, B, and C, the three criteria. Isn't that something that would have to be tweaked in order for us to grant greater flexibility? That, or is it really interpret, or can we interpret as filing with the commission? They could file at the end and say, okay, here are the changes we made during construction, and can we address it through rules that way?
we may be able to. I haven't thought about that or really looked into it. But the language that really trips us up here in the Century Code is prior to any construction activities for the adjustment.
Right.
That's basically, this is a timing issue. And it's an important timing issue for some of these bigger changes. But for some of these smaller ones, I guess the way I look at it is, in the end, we've got noncompliance. And I think one of the easiest ways to address this is for us to look at, and it's gonna always be dependent. There's gonna be different things to look at. Number of violations. I know you said you didn't really want to look at that, Commissioner Christman, but it's gonna be different based on pipeline length and all those things. And I think in each case we look at it and it's like, does this noncompliance warrant a warning letter? Is it something we need to maybe look at some sort of a fine and either pursue a consent agreement or go to a formal complaint and hearing on? I think there's different ways we can handle them and really take a look at everything that's involved with it and determine whether or not it's a big deal or not a big deal, because some of them are going to be big deals and some of them are going to be fairly minor variations as the pipeline was built for reasons that, should they have been certified according to the Century Code? Yeah, they're supposed to certify before they do it, but I don't know realistically how practical that is. It'd be nice to hear from industry and other people that are out there constructing it. Even our third-party inspectors is like, how often are they out there? When are they going to catch these things? Maybe we do need to look at some of the timing aspects of either the Century Code or address it in our rules. And I think that gives us more of a hard line, and it also gives industry clarity as well, so that they know maybe a little bit better. I mean, it's fairly clear, but at the same time, I don't know that a 1 foot deviation in five spots along the line because of some rocks, I'm pretty sure the guys out there digging the trench aren't going, wow, we better certify that with the commission
right.
First.
Yeah, or even maybe the company doesn't necessarily know that they've deviated or need to or have.
That is a great question.
Practicality, I think it gets really cumbersome and goes against the spirit of why this was created to require them to, in all of these in-corridor route changes, to certify in advance. It's not very practical.
Well, my question still, though, is, and you kind of answered, but is... I don't think there's disagreement on being able to let companies operate and make these deviations during the construction process that are reasonable and just common sense. They're going to happen. So my question is there a way to grant reasonable flexibility without having to file in advance with the commission through the rulemaking process to grant an exception, or would it have to be an adjustment, ever so slight, but an adjustment in statute, or is that something you'd have to look into?
I can say right now, because I have the statute in front of me, we'd probably have to change the statute, and then I'd have to look to see what our rules say in addition to that to determine if there would be additional changes that need to be made there as well. But basically, the Century Code is what creates this timing issue. It, because of the way it's worded in there, it says that it has to be certified prior to the construction of the change, or the constructing the change or deviation. So could we add in a subsection that addresses that a little bit more clearly? Absolutely, we could go lots of different ways. We could say anything under a 20-foot variation could be done at the end, and certify at the end of construction. Anything over 20 feet has to be done prior to it. I mean, there's ways we could modify that. I think even if it stays as is, I think there's ways for us to approach it that we can, I mean, with changes always make it more clear, but I think our approach to the way it's written now can keep us moving forward in a reasonable manner as
have
well.
Have we ever said no?
Have we ever said no?
To they want to make a route change within the corridor? You know, has the commission ever said, no, you can't move it 7 feet? Or?
I guess that'd be a good question for Pat. Pat, do you know, have we ever denied a certification?
I don't recall that we ever have. Certainly we have, leave myself some leeway, but 99% of the time we've granted it, or we've issued a letter back to the company that says, we've received your certification, thank you. And that's how we handle most of them. One of the other possibilities I was thinking of was, you know, when we do the siting orders for a pipeline, we have pretty much defined the route as the center line of the pipe. Now, in an order, we wouldn't necessarily have to define the route as the center line of the pipe. Maybe the route could be 10 feet either side of the center line of the pipe.
I'm not necessarily against that, but I want to think it through a little bit because there's some importance to knowing where these things are. You know, just like the examples I was citing earlier where you can be threading a needle on something. Well, there could also be the next case where you're leaving, there's a little gap there, and if the facility that is in front of us gets built in the middle of that corridor, it leaves room for someone else to build something between that and a residence or something like that, or a road. But if they're going to go 30, 40 feet over in the corridor and squeeze that tighter, then maybe it's not possible. And I imagine the developer of the next project looks at what we have and looks at this information to see where existing infrastructure is and uses it to gauge a general route for their planning. So having this stuff on record and fairly accurately, I think, is important. I do not know to what extent the OneCall people rely on this information to determine where there is something and when it needs to get flagged. If you say it's here, but then you build it 20 feet over, do the flaggers mark where it was supposed to be or where it is? And that could be a problem as well. I don't know if our records are the same as what they use for that. I believe it's anywhere within the construction corridor. They would have to have the one call ticket in terms of any facilities within that area.
And I think they actually use equipment to physically locate it as well. So they don't just go by record for marking it. They, I think they try as accurately as possible too.
Good question.
Yeah. That might be addressing it in our ordering provisions and things like that might be an acceptable and clean way to do this. So I'd have to think about that a little bit too myself, but I think if we can provide the clarity there, I think we can make it harmonize with the law and our rules and work out fairly well.
So then are we setting the route the same as the corridor? I mean,
I don't think this is a good direction to be going.
I feel like I kind of like the direction, and I sort of like the idea of doing the route in the corridor as the same, so then they can just move it around within that area that's been approved and established, and there shouldn't be any exclusion and avoidance areas within the corridor. Those should have been carved out.
They should at least be identified.
Or identified,
yeah.
You know? So I do sort of like that, and I think, like, if you just create a wider route, we're getting into the same issues of, you know, like, any time you make it 20 feet or 30 feet or, you know, whatever, you're inviting that then when it's 6 inches over or a foot over, then what? You know, I just feel like the corridor is pretty.
That's why
I've been scrubbed for the purpose of construction, so.
That's why I said I think
what we have, I don't know, I think it's generally working fine, and companies need to certify these things when they realize. Now, I'm not sure that we don't need to tweak it as far as filing in advance. I mean, if you're out there digging and you run into an enormous rock and you want to go 3 or 4 feet, I wouldn't expect someone to shut down construction over a small thing like that. So maybe we need to address that. But as far as, you know, these cumulative, relatively small deviations, I just would expect staff to not take action if they're not meaningful or impactful. And the same size of a deviation that is meaningful or impactful, that there would potentially be an action. And you, our staff uses good judgment on a lot of things, and it seems to me this can be solved with that.
But what about the way the order is written, though? And if it's written so specifically that because of the way Century Code is written, that if they move 2 feet and they don't have that flexibility, but you don't like the fact that they can move it around, or giving them that leeway?
Well, I think,
or did I misunderstand?
Something small like a couple feet. It's to say, you know, Brian made the example with the speeding laws. You draw a line someplace, and technically we're breaking the law for 2 miles an hour over, just like they aren't following these procedures if they deviate by 2 feet. But you're very likely not going to get a ticket for going 2 miles an hour over, and I think you should probably not get a notice of noncompliance from us for deviating a couple feet, unless, like I said, you've threaded the needle and tried to build the pipeline exactly 500 feet from somebody's house, and now you're only 498.
But I think we'd have to give them some type of flexibility, though, in the order to not be out of compliance with the way law is written.
Or change the law.
Or change the law.
The law could be tweaked to say, because the first sentence is already pretty clear, before or during construction, a utility without any action by the commission may adjust the route of a gas or liquid transmission line within the designated corridor. It should say period, and then it should say the company must file with the commission that the utility supporting documentation that A, doesn't affect any, it will be within the corridor, or it is within the corridor, doesn't affect exclusion avoidance areas, and we'll comply with the order. I mean, just take out the before construction stuff, and that's it.
Right.
They should just file that with us if they're doing this within a corridor and they're not affecting any avoidance areas and exclusion areas, then they should just make that filing, and we don't have to be specific when that filing happens, whether it's before, during, or after. They can decide themselves.
Well,
that's what I think would work the best.
Yeah. I'm headed in the same direction. I just, again, I think, Brian, you're going to do some homework on whether we could do it through rule, but it seems like we'd have to do it through statute.
Again, I always put statute before rule.
Yeah.
And since this is currently in statute, I think that's probably the best place. What I would look to for rules is to see if once we made the change in statute, if we needed to tweak or modify anything in rules as well. That's what I would need to look into. But
the other thing I would want to circle back to you on is just if all law enforcement view that 10 mile an hour over is as kind of the exception or not.
I'll tell you this. I don't do 85 on the interstate. That's a little different story. But when I was in the city of Mandan, I was a little more lenient.
Do we end up in a similar spot where we're at now? This is probably a good idea to fix this and make it more clear.
Yeah.
But so how close do you get to build then to the exclusion and avoidance areas? It says without affecting them.
Can't we detail that in the order? Oh, sorry.
If we routed them, or they came to a hearing and chose to route it somewhere to avoid an important cultural resource, for example, and so they come in and testify, yeah, we're staying 100 feet away from this with this route. But now it's a 200-foot corridor, and so now they're just within inches of it.
So some of them are spelled out in law, how far they have to be. The residences and businesses are spelled out in law at that distance. And typically when there's exclusion avoidance areas that the State Historical Society or the parks or, you know, the wildlife agencies have identified, like I remember some of the butterfly habitat, and I think it was this line actually that had to stay, it was specified 25 feet or some certain amount of distance, and they had to have the fencing up prior to construction and whatever. So I think that those are typically spelled out by the agencies that are protecting them in their consultation with them. And we could shore that up in the language of our orders too.
Well, if we're going to tweak this law, we sure, we only have 2 or 3 weeks till, I can't remember what date that is, in early December for us to put in an agency bill.
December 4th.
And we sure need some industry input on it, because the last thing I want to do is make this so to solve their problem. And then, we just passed this law, and now the PSC is trying to change it. You know,
I think the industry should bring this bill forward, because they're the ones that have worked with it and know what the requirements, and can say, here's why it doesn't work. And we can speak up and support them.
Yeah.
But they brought these forward to begin with. This was their initiation. And I think generally on these types of things, I feel like it's, you know, they have lobbyists and they have organizations that do this. So
they also have more time.
And Todd Cranda knows this thing inside and out and can probably speak to why it was written the way it is. And maybe it's not the best change. I don't know. I mean, it seems like it is. It seems like a cumbersome expectation and not very practical. And it doesn't serve a huge public interest that I can see. So that's my perspective. But I think I'd feel more comfortable at this point with the industry bringing forth the change.
That's a good point. And they could also, if they're whoever's listening on the phone or in the room, cite the fact that 99%, if not 100% of the time, we're approving these deviations. And if there's something specific, you know, with a cultural resource, and we want to be a little more prescriptive on just that little small stretch of the pipeline in the order, I think if we deem that necessary, you know, any adjustments related, you know, within 100 yards or whatever of this resource, maybe we would want to know about, or just, you know, exclude that just to be safe if that should happen to come up.
Well, and again, they're at their own risk, because it does say clearly that there's a different process for if you are going to affect.
Yes, that's true.
Yep. Exclusion avoidance area. And so that gives us discretion to say what affecting is. You know, so if they get too close and we see that, you know, we could take action in that respect as well.
That's true.
So yeah,
they should err on the side of being safe.
This is really it's for the low-hanging fruit or the tossing a softball. It's like, well, obviously there's no avoidance or exclusion areas anywhere near this. It's within the corridor. That's why they get to say, we're making this change, and then make the change. However, it seems like the practicality of the timing and the construction process, I think it was well written, and I think it tried to do what everybody wanted it to do, but as all things that happen, sometimes later you find out maybe it didn't work as well as it could have. And we're not quite getting to where we want to be with it, so now it's time to look at it and clarify it and change it. And I believe industry bringing it is probably the best way to facilitate a really good discussion and working through a lot of, I mean, it seems like it's going to be real clear cut to change, but at the same time, I'm always cautious about that as well, because again, what are we missing? What little things, what little tweaks, what's the ripple effect, things like that. So, but that's where having the discussion and with the legislature, I think, really produces an optimal result most of the time. And we get as close as we can, and we got to fix it again later, so be it. That happens too.
Yeah, and it's going to be important because I know we have these people listening, that some of the developers that are working out in very rural areas, it might be very tempting to, you know, come up with a draft that is very loose in these interpretations and just almost to the point of eliminating the route. Let's just build in the corridor and you're fine. However, that is not going to be helpful for developers in other areas. And I know of a case coming up where there's a political subdivision and probably some landowners that are eyeing future development. And they would like to see this done very specifically and in maybe a nice straight line to so that they can plan for future development around it, not just somewhere out there and making all kinds of curves and everything that are going to make potential development over the top of the facility problematic.
Mm-hmm.
So there is importance in being precise with these things too, and so I hope that that will be how something is drafted up. But in the meantime, and I think this is what I want to leave our staff with my opinion, I do not believe that we need these compliance actions taken if the deviation was not meaningful, unless potentially if it's just too excessive, you know, a 10-mile pipeline and every 50 feet they're off the other direction somewhere that, you know, maybe then there is a reason. But
yeah,
I agree with you, Randy. I hope that's clear from my perspective too.
I think by addressing the timing of the certification is probably maybe the better route to go than just widening the corridor to being where the pipeline can go. So
yeah,
I think it's just easier to be precise as you can, but then we're going to make sure that the timing aspect of it allows for a really real-world approach to notifying us in a timely manner. We still want the notification, and that's still important. It's just we're going to be realistic about when that happens.
Okay. I don't have anything more, except for I do still think, I mean, that gives a policy direction, but I think I would like an update on what's going on with the Senex.
So Senex filed something this morning that
okay.
has information, a lot of information in there. Take a look at that real quick.
Okay.
And if not, we can, Pat might even already have a pretty good summary of both of these cases and what's been going on. Again, like I said, I don't view them, either one of them, as similar. I think one has got some very large deviations. The other one's got deviations, but you know, they're definitely two different cases when you look at them.
Okay.
Does staff have that flexibility now, or do they?
I believe we do.
Okay.
I think the holdup is always staff being cautious about making determinations that kind of lay with you as commissioners. But at the same time, I view that as in the one case, we've got a non-compliance. We're probably looking at a consent agreement, and we bring it before you, and then you at that point get to say whether or not what we did was reasonable or not, and if we looked at it reasonably, and if not, you reject the consent agreement and we start over again.
Thanks.
So
yeah.
I still think we put it in your guys' hands. It's just we do a little bit more running with it at the forefront, and I guess I don't have a problem with that. But I think we have the ability to work with these cases and through the consent agreement really come up with what's appropriate to deal with what happened in it.
Okay.
Well, if I'm staff right now, I'd probably be wondering, okay, so we have flexibility, but how much flexibility do we have? And I think that question's going to...
Well, that's...
I think discretion is the better term versus flexibility.
That's what brought us to the table was us,
right.
Was staff wondering, okay, we're supposed to draw a line maybe here, but we're not really sure where to do it. But I think you guys have given us enough direction and clarity to move forward on these. And like I said, when we bring a consent agreement, or if we don't and you feel there should be one, I guess that's something we can look at later. And I think that's where we come together and look at whether or not what we did is what the commission wants to move forward with.
So you have what you need from the work
session. I believe so. Pat, do you have the clarity that you were looking for?
Yeah, I think we can go forward with what we have. I wanted to mention to Commissioner Fedorchak, there is information for the other Endeavor case. There's a notice, an updated note or a supplemental notice of noncompliance there with quite a bit of information. And if you would like more detail than what's there, then I can provide that as well.
And what's there mean? Where?
I believe it's filed in the case.
Okay. So, but we don't get notices like that. So how would we know that's been done when you guys have done this sort of stuff? I mean, we don't get copies of all that. And I'm not saying I need copies of all that. But you know, when we're sending violations or potential notices out to companies that are, you know, I guess I feel like I would like to know that we've done that somehow.
Sure. I will, whenever I do that, then I can email it to commissioners as well.
Yeah.
Are you doing a bunch of these now, Pat?
We just have the, I shouldn't say we just have the two. These are the two pipeline cases. There is a case regarding a wind farm that hasn't been put together yet, but it probably will be.
All right. Well, that's not like 10 a day, so I guess I would like to get copies of them when you're sending those out, if you can add me on a distribution list. Okay. And maybe just as a portfolio holder, that makes sense.
Well, no,
I don't know.
When we talk about what do these really look like? Does this include all the information of the case and maps and everything like that? I don't want all that.
It's generally, it almost looks like sort of a memo. It's a timeline of what happened, went
wrong.
So
it's a few pages?
Usually, yes.
I would like to be copied in. If it's something that includes a lot of printing, then just a notification that it was sent, and I can go and look at it on the computer and determine whether it's something I want to print out or not.
Sure.
But
well, you're just talking about emailing them to us, right, Pat? Not just printing copies and distributing.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Just so then you can decide if you want to print it.
Yeah, that's fine then.
And then could you just go back and email us the two for this, the two pipeline ones? Those two cases?
Yes. On the Endeavor case, do you want just the updated or the supplemental one? And it covers. I'll send them both.
Yeah.
I'll send original and the supplemental.
Perfect. Sounds good.
Okay,
All right. I have nothing more, Mr. Chairman.
Only for 44 more days, then I'm paroled.
Is it 44?
44. Yeah. I had the election day countdown, and now, no, it's been fun. Commissioner Christman, anything else from you?
I do not.
Brian, I think we heard from Pat. He said I think he's good with what
I've
you
got
want.
Everything I need.
Okay. I'm good as well. So we are adjourned. Thanks, everyone. Or maybe not adjourned.